All right, when we're writing up the results of a two-group discriminant function, there's a series of things that we want to go through. And we're going to talk about all of these in more detail and show you how they happen in SPSS. But I wanted to start with a basic script. What are we looking for? What are we going to tell? Does the model work? The basic summary statistic is a thing called Wilk's lambda. And here's the funky thing about lambda: smaller is better. A perfectly accurate model, a fully discriminating model, will have a lambda of zero. A model that doesn't do a damn thing will have a lambda of one. Okay? Now, there will be a chi-squared test of the null hypothesis, which is also known as sphericity, and it's basically asking, is there a relationship between these variables and group membership? All right, if we're looking at the relationship between a predictor and a criterion, and there's no relationship at all, what's the shape of a two-dimension no relationship? What's that? That's a circle. Now imagine that we had a third dimension, which is another predictor, and there was no relationship between that predictor and this predictor, and no relationship between either predictor and the criterion, then the shape of that thing in three dimension would be a sphere. Okay? No useful relationships anywhere. That's sphericity. That's the basic null. So we're going to have a significance test of whether or not the model works. It's a chi-square now instead of an ANOVA, but the same thing. If p is less than 0.05, the model works better than would be expected by chance given the power and the sample size. How well does the model work? With practice, you can interpret lambdas, but we're not going to practice that much. You get a canonical correlation, and you get a canonical correlation squared. The canonical correlation is very much like the R from a multiple regression. You square it, you get the variance, the group variance accounted for by the model. It means the same thing as an R square in multiple regression. And that's the most, one of the most commonly used measures. Another is the percent of variance. And this is funky, because we have this thing that we think of as percent of variance. Then there's this other thing that's labeled percent of variance that doesn't mean that at all. Here's what the percent of variance means in the SPSS output. Of the variance accounted for, how much variance does this LDF account for? Now, if you've only got one LDF for two groups, it's always 100%. We're going to see bigger models on Thursday, where we sometimes have a large spatial model where we have multiple discriminant functions, and then we might ask, which one of these helps the most and by how much? But I don't want to say anything else about this because it's really confusing and annoying right now. It's one of those things that's easier to explain later, and I always think of that about this point in the lecture that I should have said, we'll talk about this later. Percent correct classification. We talk about that reclassification table. We take the people, we know what group they're in, we take the model and reclassify them and see how well we did. These are the two that you're going to see most often: the canonical R-square and the percent correct classification. And there's a fairly simple idea about when you're going to see them emphasized. People who are working in theory, who are working theoretically, who are testing models and theories and paradigms and things like that, tend to talk in percent of variance accounted for, because that statistic is like what we'll use in multiple regression, later what we'll use in factor analysis and other models. So how much variance is accounted for? How well does your model do? How much variance is accounted for? People who are working in the more pragmatic aspects, where they're not just interested in theory, but they're then going to apply that theory and actually make classifications, they have a tendency to say, all right, I'm glad you accounted for variance. That's great. How well do you reclassify? You with me? Don't tell me some lofty theoretical notion of variance accounted for. How many did you get right? And you'll see people arguing back and forth between these two. There is a general positive relationship between them. The more variance you account for, the less overlap, the better you classify. But these two are not strongly related. Okay? I've had situations where I was only accounting for 30-35% of the variance. but was getting 85% correct classification. I've had other situations where I was getting 80% of the variance and only making 45, 55% correct classification. Okay? So you're going to see people arguing. Make sure that they're not arguing out of convenience. Make sure that they're arguing for what makes sense. Theoretically, how much variance did you account for? Pragmatically, how well did you do? Different approaches to asking how well does the model work.
What would be a situation where you could account for a lot of the variance but not, like, what's happening there?
Really lousy initial classification. If the classifications they're giving me suck, then a model may do a very nice job of reproducing their suckiness, but not doing well on a new population of people. Does that make sense? Bad criterion variable, shit rolls downhill forever. Whether it's a bad quantitative criterion in regression or bad classification criterion in LDF, if the criterion variable sucks, the model of it must. Okay? So I can model the hell out of that variable, but it doesn't matter because it's not what I'm really trying to classify. And that'll break your heart the first couple of times you run into it. Okay, interpreting the linear discriminant function. There are three possible bases for interpreting. There's an unstandardized or raw regression weight. Means the same thing that a multiple regression weight, you just don't get significance tests. Because of all the collinearity, because of all the scale differences, really doesn't do a lot for you. The standardized discriminant weights are the same thing as regression beta weights. They are very useful for talking about the unique contribution of that variable to the model. But then there's this other thing called discriminant structure weights. Discriminant structure weights are the correlation between the LDF and each variable. It really is a Pearson product moment correlation. Any structure weight you see is a Pearson product moment correlation between some individual variable and some function or aggregate. Beta weights sometimes felt like they were even getting in the way because all that they talk about is a unique contribution. And so we could have weird things happen, like here's three variables that are all predictive but highly intercorrelated, and we put them in, and the R-square goes up, but none of them have a unique contribution. Okay? Do they do something as a group? Yes. Do they do much that's unique on average? No. They're bumping up the R-square because of what they contribute together. But they're falling out of the model individually because they have no unique contribution. Discriminant structure weights are a way around this. Because it talks about, we have this LDF, what variables are correlated with it? Not what variables have a unique contribution to it, but what variables are correlated with it. Discriminant function grows out of a tradition called factor analysis. And in factor analysis, we name things based on what they're correlated with. So if all these variables are correlated with performance, then they're all related to performance. In that model, in the factor analysis model, and in the discriminant model, what you're correlated with is what's defining, not what you make a unique contribution to. Now obviously, the most complete and the best interpretation will be a combination of what variables are correlated to this LDF and what variables make a unique contribution to it. The unique contribution part allows us to ask, well, could I maybe slide some of these variables out of the model without hurting the accuracy of the model? Okay, can I reduce this model by throwing out the redundant ones? But we also know that that redundancy is part of the whole story. And so standardized discriminant weights are interpreted when there's an emphasis on efficiency. What are the unique contributors? Discriminant structure weights are interpreted when the emphasis is on the completeness of the story. All of the variables that are related to this function and how they're related. It is very important to compare the bivariate and the multivariate results because all of the things that you can get with correlation and multiple regression weights, you can get with ANOVA and discriminant function. You can get smiley faces, where basically you have the same contribution as bivariate pattern. You can get collinearity effects. Variables that have big ANOVAs don't have a unique contribution to the model because they're highly collinear. And you can get suppressor effects. Variables that don't have a significant ANOVA but contribute to the model, or that have a significant mean difference in one direction but contribute in the other direction in the LDF. So you still have to play that game of what's going on, bivariate and multivariate, with the same idea that if the bivariate and the multivariate disagree, we tend to go with the multivariate, because when modeling complicated stuff, more complicated models are more accurate on average. We then ask what the LDF does for us. Consider the group centroids. Consider the reclassification results. Another way of asking, how well does the model work? Which takes us back to this distinction we talked about before. How much variance is accounted for versus how much reclassification? A complete description of your results is going to touch on both. If you're reporting the results of a two-group ANOVA, life is simpler. There's now going to be an F-test of the multivariate null. You can get the canonical R-square. And then you want to compare the bivariate and the multivariate results, because again, you might have some variables that don't have a mean difference between the groups, but the multivariate analysis shows a difference between the groups, and vice versa. So you want to cling to comparing the bivariate and the multivariate. All right,